Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges.
Welcome to the Reasonable Voices radio show, where Reasonable Voices have the opportunity to have their say and tell us all the exciting things they're doing. My guest this afternoon is Joel Sartore. He's a photographer, speaker, author, teacher, conservationist, National Geographic Fellow, and a regular contributor to National Geographic Magazine, the Audubon Magazine, Time, Life, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated. He's everywhere, including, which is why I think I've called him to ask him to be on the show again, the CBS Sunday Morning Show with Charles Osgood. And I think that's what tickled my mind and said, let's find out what Joel is up to. Joel, how are you, and welcome back to the show?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It always is. You're such a great guest, and it seems to me your life mission is about saving the planet, the animals, the environment, landscape. Let's jump right in with some updates. I know the last time we talked, which really was the first time we talked, you're the founder of the Photo Arc. And your work was going to be hanging and was hanging in the trees on the downtown mall in Charlottesville, Virginia. And what are some updates with this project? How's it going?
Well, good. Thanks for asking. We'll be at 5,000 species this fall. The goal is to photograph every captive species on Earth, and that's about 12,000 total. So I figure another 10 to 15 years should get it mostly done.
Wow.
So we've been at it about 10 years so far, 5,000 species. And these are all animals that we photograph on black and white backgrounds. We don't put them on them using Photoshop. We just do the real thing. We use studio lighting, and we work with zoos around the world months in advance, usually, to figure out which animals they have that have been hand-raised or would tolerate the process. For smaller animals, they are put into a small little shooting tent that's sealed up tight. And for larger animals like tigers or bears, their off-exhibit space will either be painted black or white, or we'll put board sheeting or plastic sheeting in. It's going well. The photo arc was featured in a recent documentary. It's just now coming out, called Racing Extinction, by the director Luis Ojos. He's the one that won the Academy Award for the movie The Cove.
Yes.
About dolphin slaughter in Taiji, Japan. And so that was exciting. They broadcast the photo arc pictures on the sides of the UN building in New York City last fall to start the climate change summit.
There you
go. And that's featured in the film. So that's happened since I saw you last.
Wow.
And PBS is probably going to do a series on the photo arc that'll air in the spring of 2017. And we're going to have an exhibition of the work at National Geographic's headquarters in Washington, D.C. in early November.
Wow.
And we're doing a book to go along with that. So lots of things are happening. It's a 10-year overnight success.
Yes. Wow. It's so, I hear what you're saying, because it does seem like after, of course, you've been the one doing it, but I've been following it. It seems like it's been a long haul. And of course, as you say, there's still a lot to do and years it will take to do it. But suddenly the world seems to be, not so suddenly, but they seem to be coming aware. Is that?
Yes, yes. And that's a great thing. saying. Yeah. There's not much time to lose. We have, the reason we're doing the project isn't just so I stay busy. It's actually to try to get the public aware of the extinction crisis that's coming.
Yes.
And get them to care enough to want to do something about it while we can still save species. There's plenty of time to save species still, but we've got to start acting now. And that means getting people to care. And this is the best thing I could think of, really, in terms of getting people to just pay attention to all the creatures we share the planet with and realize that as they go, we go.
So do we, yes.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of folly to think we could do half of all species to extinction, but we'll be just fine. I mean, it doesn't work that way. We have to have pollinating insects like bees and even flies.
Uh-huh.
Bring us everything from flowers to fruits and vegetables. So. It's very important to save pieces of the natural world as much as we can to regulate our climate, our precipitation. It all kind of rolls into the same thing, and we figured, well, maybe species portraits is the way to do it. Get people to fall in love with these animals as I have, get them to realize that they're worth preserving.
And, you know, having seen your work, and of course we'll give the website for Photo Arc and everything before we get off the show, but... having seen your work, I know the great detail and beauty of it, of both the subject and the way it's shot. It does do that. It makes people go, oh, my God, you know, what happens? I think people are still having trouble understanding that, and I don't want to butcher a quote of yours, but if we don't save... you know, what we do to the animal and the earth itself, we are doing to ourselves. I'm not certain they quite get that connection yet. I don't know. I know the Pope's coming out big on it, but I do know when we look at your photography, which is coming up everywhere now, it seems. Thank you very much. We do get a sense of the magnitude. Is that fair? The magnitude of what's at stake here. Yeah.
Right, that's right. And I think that hopefully people, I mean, what we need is a sea change in how we view our relationship with the environment. And that's tough for all time, Marcelo, because we have, you know, the next generation is really fairly addicted to electronics, a lot of them, and they don't get out much. They don't have, they're in urban areas, not rural areas. They're not really that connected to the natural world. But they need to be,
yes.
Because that natural world really fuels not only our economy, but our very survival. It's one thing to talk about climate change in terms of, oh, you know, the world's going to get a little hotter.
Yes.
Another thing to say, well, the rains are going to stop coming on land. Or there will be too much rain and we won't be able to pull off crops. I mean, pulling off crops on dry land or non-irrigated farms is a really precise dance. You need good moisture over the winter in terms of snow in the northern climates. You need precise rains in the spring after planting. You need a few rains during the summer, and then you need the rains to abate in the fall so you can harvest.
Yes.
If that doesn't happen just right, your crops don't grow, and that's food scarcity is going to be a major issue, food and water scarcity coming up. If all the predictions are coming true, and we're starting to see more and more violent storms, no more erratic rain patterns, and certainly we're seeing the rate of species extinction accelerating, mostly due to habitat loss, but climate change is going to play a real effect starting to now. I'm working on a National Geographic story right now, in fact, on the winning and losing species due to climate change, and it's the things that are happening are starting now, and I don't want to just scare people and make them, oh, I can't do anything, when in fact, there are lots of things we can do, tons of things that will make this a better situation for all of us, but we actually have to start the conversation, and hopefully the photo arc gets people to care enough to want to dive in and learn about where their power comes from, and where they're, and how much fuel their automobile uses, and whether or not they need to insulate their homes. Yes, the answer is, they do need to insulate their homes, but it's an entree into the world of thinking green and thinking about humanity's long-term survival, really.
And do you think also that, or how do you feel, when people say that these shark attacks, for instance, are coming because they're following their food in because there's less of it, or bears and coyotes coming into urban areas? Is this all part of what you're trying to point out to us, too?
Is that? Oh, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way, but 7 billion people. And that many people, it's going to mean we're not going to have a lot of room for other life forms in terms of bears or sharks,
yes,
or wolves. Or, I mean, we're just going to overrun the planet with our numbers. And so, I mean, we lose, what, 20,000 people a year minimum to car wrecks a year in this country. And we lose many, many times the number of bear attacks we have in terms of domestic dog attacks. Domestic dogs kill many people in this country every year. So I'm not too worried about bear attacks when the average in North America is one person killed per year on the entire continent, and there are millions of people walking around the landscape. But I am concerned about the fate of bears, because they need big, intact chunks of wilderness to really thrive.
Yes. And we're taking it away, and of course, in not only just because we're building houses, but because of what we're driving and what we're eating and our lifestyle, we are taking away their area to live.
Sure.
And as you say.
Right. I would suggest this. I mean, the world's a big place, and you would go crazy trying to think about how to save the world. But what I do, and it makes me very optimistic, I never lose faith, and I never lose hope. What I do is I concentrate on things I can do in my own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Planted milkweed for monarch butterflies, and that our kids have learned about what monarchs need to survive. And we planted some prairie back here in Nebraska, and we try to buy our fruits and vegetables in season, and not truck strawberries across the country in the dead of winter. And we try to eat less meat, because we still eat meat, but we eat less of it because it's not as good for you as a plant-based diet. And it also is much more water and energy intensive to eat a lot of meat.
Yes.
And we just try to do the things that we think will help. Our house is insulated. We have a Prius, and we try to drive that all the time instead of our pickup truck, which we really only drive when we're hauling architectural salvage, which is also a green thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
We try to just live the best we can and care. And we support our local zoo tremendously. They do a lot of endangered species breeding right here at the Lincoln Zoo and at the Omaha Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And we do the best we can, and at the end of our days, we're going to know that for us, that will be enough, and we're going to be guilt-free all the way. We're not trying to save the entire planet at our house.
Yes.
Now, I'm trying to save every species on Earth with the photo arc, but in order for my wife and kids to come along with me and buy into this big adventure, and we're just trying to do what we can in Lincoln, Nebraska, in our own backyards. And I think that's enough. That's plenty.
Yes. And if everybody did that, that would be...
If I did that, it'd be a good thing. Like if we see a restaurant in Lincoln that's selling shark or selling swordfish, some long-lived ocean-going fish that we know is in trouble and at risk of extinction, we tell the restaurant about that.
Yes.
It's their choice whether or not to pull it from their menu, and we're very sweet about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if they don't pull it from their menu, then we don't go. We vote with our feet. We quit going there. And so we're very conscious of what we spend our money on. Here's the bottom line. How you spend your money is that's more powerful anymore than voting at the ballot box in a way.
Yes.
Because now that we've seen the corrupting influence of money on elections, we know money moves mountains. And that's always been the case.
Exactly.
Well, how about if we vote with our pocketbooks? Whenever we are buying something, we know that is cueing a retailer or a service provider to do this again.
Yes.
Do it again and again. And so when you spend your money, you literally can create positive change if you buy the right product, or negative change if you buy the wrong ones. And so we always say, hey, you don't have to wait for an election year to vote, and you don't have to be 21. And vote with your wallet or your purse.
Yes.
That's powerful there. That's really powerful. And truly, I think that's what's going to change the world more than anything, is when people realize that being green, even slightly, makes them money.
Yes.
That's a big thing.
You know, it's so true. You're absolutely right. What we pay for, what we buy repeatedly, if we became more aware of as a consumer, we overconsume anyway, but when we consume, if we consume wisely, know where those clothes come from and what's on the menu and what, it's true. The market responds to how we spend.
Where we had, let's say major industries say, we can't do this. This can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
This can't be done. And then all of a sudden, poof, virtually overnight because consumers demanded it.
Yes.
And that's powerful. That's mm-hmm. the power to really change the world. And I think that's certainly a legitimate thing. We live in I realize we live in a capitalistic world, and I like money like everybody else.
Sure.
But I'm also very aware of how I spend money, what I spend it on, and is my money going towards good things or things I would consider environmentally bad?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no radical. I'm mm-hmm. just a guy that really cares about the future and health of my children and their children,
mm-hmm.
as well as myself. And I really like birds. I like mammals. I'd like to think that on my watch, at least, I tried to keep them from going extinct.
And doing it with photography is such a non-invasive, non-threatening way.
Yeah.
Just look at this. It's beautiful. It's great art. But it has a message that allows the viewer, the eye of the beholder, to see what really is the substance beyond the beauty of this photograph. Your work does that, and I just think we all need to wake up. Between you and the Pope, I think we might do it.
Well, maybe I think that this is actually a great time to be alive and to
yes.
try to affect change. Because
yes.
Talk to one another as ever before,
mm-hmm.
and we have the ability to really change the world in a good way and make the world a better place. And I'm very gung-ho on the future,
mm-hmm.
and always have been, always will be. And I'm here to tell you that most of the species that I photographed for the photo arc can be saved, but we do need to pay attention.
Yes.
I really do.
Yes. And you know, while we're talking about it, you've written several books, Rare, Portraits of America's Endangered Species, and Photography, Your Family, and Nebraska Under a Big
right.
Red Sky. I love that. Oh,
right.
Which reminds me, I think the last time we talked, you were doing a working vacation, and the family
was
in the car with you, right?
That's right.
So
That's
how right. how is, it's Kathy, right? Kathy
yeah.
and
Kathy
the children.
There. Yep. Kathy.
Yeah. Yes.
Everybody's doing real well, and they're very tolerant of me, which I'm grateful for.
Yes.
Kathy came home the other night and found me doing a photo shoot in the living room on her living room table on the ticks. American dog ticks that I collected. And she wanted a photo of a group of ticks on white close up, and so I was just taking care of that. She walked up and looked at the table and just shook her head and walked away.
Yes.
She didn't even hear me out.
You know, it reaches a point where you just have to go, that's who he is.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the whole house is a photo studio, and I would tell Kathy, you know, just go along. Just don't try to spit the bit.
Yeah.
Put up with, okay?
Well, she sounds wonderful. And I can't get, I still remember how quiet the children were when you and I were on the phone for all that time. And
yeah.
and they were supposed to be on vacation. But
they're very good kids.
Yes. You know, tell us about, well, actually, maybe we'll take a break and come back, but I do want to talk about you're going to Europe, and I know we
yeah.
just managed to schedule you because you're so very busy, but I'm glad
yeah.
we were able to schedule you before you took off for Europe. And this new book, you know, I love the title, Let's Be Reasonable, really picked up, caught my eye, or whatever. But why don't we take a short break? And when we come back, we'll talk about the new book, we'll talk about Europe, and we'll talk about how we can help you in your mission in life. Stay with us. We are talking to photographer Joel Sartore, who is doing his best with his talent as a writer and as a photographer to help us pay attention, to do our best as consumers and in protecting endangered species and protecting the environment and realizing how all of that is affecting climate change, which of course is affecting human life. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Woody Allen has always skirted the edge of indie filmdom.
but films crafted with limited budgets and no studio backing qualify as indie. And where Woody is involved, they are indies in a class of their own. Inspired by the Madoff scandal, here he weaves the story of Blue Jasmine around the human costs of callous financial chicanery. Not for those who lost money, but in this case, the scoundrel's wife. Jasmine, an Oscar-winning role for Cate Blanchett, is accustomed to comfort and excess. Facing the real world for the first time without her cloak of wealth, she seeks out her blue-collar sister Ginger, played with considerable depth and vulnerability by Sally Hawkins. Jasmine's privileged life has allowed her to think herself above all others. Now, her attempts to survive in the real world are both devastating and tragically entertaining. One benefit of being Woody Allen is that great actors, both lead and supporting, flock to his films. Alec Baldwin, Peter Sarsgaard, Bobby Cannavale, and even Andrew Dice Clay are extraordinary as they elevate this sad story to a satisfying rich level. Blue Jasmine, a blue-blooded indie, earns the imprimatur masterpiece. Blue Jasmine, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. My guest today is photographer and writer Joel Sartore. You have seen his work, I am certain, and read it as well. He's featured in National Geographic magazine quite often. And he's written a new book. He's been doing a lot of new things, really. Everything is expanding, we're happy to say, because people are beginning to pay attention. But the new book is Let's Be Reasonable. And we're very fortunate, and I'm very happy, to have Joel on the show today, because soon he'll be off to Europe, I believe next month, and I wanted to talk to him before he left about all that's been happening. So let's start with Let's Be Reasonable. Tell us about that. What does that bring that's new for us?
Well, sure, that was just a kind of a fun little book that has nothing to do with the photo art project. This is a collection of the essays I've had, mostly on the CBS Sunday Morning Show with Charles Osgood over the years. I've been doing that for a number of years now, and the University of Nebraska Press wanted a little book to celebrate an anniversary they had coming up, so we just kind of got put our heads together and thought, well, maybe we'll just do a collection of the essays I've done over the years. They're all written for the ear, but they still make for entertaining reading in the book, and it's mainly just about the fact that I like listening to different folks, and you know, I have my opinions, but I only learn when I'm listening, not when I'm talking.
Yes.
Just an opportunity to talk about, just to have several essays on different subjects, ranging everything from Mother's Day to mud, and everything in between. It's just general musings on my take on the world, and also might give folks something to think about, too.
Sure. You know, I know we both are optimistic and hopeful people who believe that if people just know, if they learn, I don't think I'm giving Americans too much credit. And of course, what this is all about is not just America, but the entire world, the planet itself, of what you do. And that, to be clear to everyone, the photo arc, that's ARK, it's a multi-year documentary project. Trying to save all the species, but especially accelerating the saving of those that are endangered via photographs is quite a calling. And that is what Joel does primarily, but he certainly writes, and he appears twice a year at least on CBS Sunday Morning and in a lot of publications. And I guess my point to finally get to it, Joel, and ask you a question is, it seems, I believe, when people are made aware, I've often said we haven't been told our entire history. We've been told part of our history. But as we learn the lifestyles of others, as we learn the history we were not taught in school, as we read something you write or look at your photographs and start to think about where those clothes come from and under what conditions they're made and what's happening to the rain and, you know, floods in the east and Midwest and tornadoes and drought in the west. Do you think we, as we start to learn about these things and really pay attention to them, that we will make the changes necessary?
Maybe. I'm hopeful. I think that the changes are going dramatic, though, for people, for the average Joe to wake up and pay attention.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's going to have to either grab their pocketbook directly.
Yes.
As in higher food prices, higher water bill, or it's going to have to, it's going to have to be some sort of a cultural shift.
Yes.
Like we've had towards, let's say, gay marriage recently. That took a long time to get accomplished.
Yes.
But now society finally seems to have accepted that. And it seemed like it happened overnight, but it took a long time.
A long time.
I think that any true change is generational. And so for people to go from really not having much knowledge about climate change impacts or
yes.
extinction issues just a few years ago to fully accepting them and then demanding that their elected leaders actually do something about it, that's going to take a while.
Yes.
It doesn't happen overnight because you're asking for people to do things differently. And people resist change unless they're uncomfortable or they've been educated.
Yes.
And it's just going to take more time than most folks in the conservation world want to take. That's just how it is. I mean, got half the country still not really that on board with climate change. But climate change aside, I mean, it's hard to deny when you fly over the country that there's not a whole lot of habitat left for many of the animals, at least the ones that live out here in farm country where I live. There's
mm-hmm.
not a ton of habitat left for them compared to what there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The hand of man is pretty heavy on everything. And it's important that we continue to be able to grow crops out here.
Yes.
We have to use chemicals to grow those crops, and that's harmful, you know, on, let's say, insects, and it's harmful to people if some of those chemicals get into the watershed, but
yes.
we're feeding the world. So it's tricky, and the thing that I've found, Marcelo, over the years is that it's not black and white. It's a lot of shades of gray, and it's a lot of learning that needs to take place.
Sure.
People need to learn, well, what are my consumer choices really about?
Yes.
Do they matter? Do I need to pay attention to this? Will this affect my pocketbook? Will this affect my children's future and now? And that's not easy, and it takes time, really, to educate people. And so I'm a pretty patient guy, but for some of these species that are living in some of the last places, they may not have the time they need to survive until humanity gets smart enough to realize that it's in all of our interests to not take down every last tree and to not fish out every sea in the ocean. You know, it's important that government step in and realize what is, that there do need to be limits on some of our activities across the world in terms
yes.
of how much extract from the earth. Will we make it? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you look at the fossil record, very few species survive in the long term.
Mm.
But we've done quite a bit of damage just in a couple hundred years here, and we're set to do more.
Mm.
That's kind of why the photo art exists, I guess.
Yes.
To just get people to maybe fall in love with some animals and care and try to save a few of them.
Exactly. That's exactly the reaction I had to what you were saying. It's why, you know, the old cliche, a picture is worth a thousand words, but it's why I think it is such a smart choice on your part. And fortunately, you're also very talented at it. The photographs, the image that makes us, I mean, it's second only to actually being able to see the animal, which of course is the point. If you want to be able to at least see these creatures or know they exist, they're alive, that's the first thing, is to give an image to the public. Because I wonder, when we hear the news, my in-laws live in California, and with all the drought in California, the very first thing that comes to my mind is, well, how is that going to affect the food supply? I lived in South Florida for quite a while, and in South Florida, most of the people were used to hurricanes. The people who live there year round, that is. I never got used to it, but I lived there long enough to understand and follow the lead of those who had. But the panic that happened when a hurricane was expected, the panic that happened in the supermarkets, in the grocery stores, really opened my eyes. So I look at California drought, and I say, how can that not have an impact on the food markets? And what do we do? And so, and I'm not saying it to frighten people. I'm saying it because, just like with your photographs, I'm saying pay attention and wonder about this and look for solutions before we start panicking at the grocery store. Anyway.
Sure. Absolutely. I think that you're right on track. And again, because these are big, big issues that are overwhelming to the individual person, including myself, I think a really good positive step, a satisfying one, and one that people can be proud of, is to just look at the good work that needs to be done in their own town,
yes.
in their own backyard. It could be saving a local forest or cleaning up a watershed. It could be helping out the local homeless shelter or food pantry or reading programs down at the library.
Yes.
Lots of really good things that we can do to make the world a better place, and this is all about good stewardship.
Yes, yes.
Being good citizens. That's all we're talking about, is just being good citizens and really doing things that make our days count. Life is short. We want to try to do the most we can to help, just to help people out and to help others out, to help save the planet. And my choice is to try to help people understand about biodiversity and its importance in our lives.
Yes.
And I think that's a pretty good effort.
Yes.
But people don't have to have that expansive of a project to really do a lot of good in their own town.
And I think that's a majorly important fact that you are stating here. You, of course, are. We think globally, and some people act globally, and you indeed are. But you're also acting locally. As you said, what you're doing with your children and part of their education, in your own backyard, it's leaving the planet better than we found it, but it's also leaving a neighborhood or a community or a school or a library or a person better off than we found them. And that is good stewardship. That's a good citizen. That's a good human being. Tell us, I know you're off to Europe. What's happening with that? And, How tell us about it. What are your plans?
Sure. Well, we're going to go to a zoo in the Czech Republic to photograph the last northern white rhino that comes into a barn at night that we can light for the photo arc. There are five left. Three are in a big outdoor enclosure in Kenya or Tanzania. I forget which. They're under armed guard. It's a big wild enclosure. One's at the San Diego Wild Animal Park in a big open pasture, and then one is at a zoo in the Czech Republic. And so we're going to go to this zoo, photograph this female with our lighting, and against the black background. So we have that species on board the ark. We might shoot a little video as well.
Wow.
Then we're going to go on to the Budapest Zoo and do a variety of animals there. We're going to work at a couple of bird parks in France, and then come on home. So we have a trip that was initiated by the need to get this northern white rhino before it's too late. That's a subspecies of rhino that's going to go extinct. And we need to get on that, so we're going to go and get that, and then get a few other rare animals. We're also going to stop at a zoo in Pleasant, Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic now.
Yes.
And they're famous for having a great rodent collection. Gerbils, mice, voles, rats, you name it. People don't give rodents much thought, but they're important in the ecosystem.
Oh, yes.
They have a world-class collection of nearly 100 rodent species. So we're going to try to get what we can while we're there, and then move on into Hungary. So that's the plan. That's the plan. And also, just in case folks are wondering how this is all funded, I fund the photo arc out of my own pocket, and it is a big black hole for money.
It's
very expensive to do. I pay for it generally with speaking fees. I'll speak at various places, and wherever I go to speak, there's a fee, and that pays for my staff to work these pictures, keyword them, and archive them all at National Geographic, so they live on forever there.
Wow.
And then wherever I speak, that's the zoo that I'll work at wherever I go.
Uh-huh.
So I'm able to kind of multitask or get more out of the trip than just the talk.
Excellent.
I'll work at the zoo where I go. So the Europe trip's an exception. I'm having to go over there pretty much on my own to get this. So if people are interested in helping out with the ARC, they can contact me at joelsartori.com, JoelSartore, joelsartori.com, and we can send them to a donate page at the Houston Zoo. The Houston Zoo has agreed to, they've been a big supporter of the ARC, and they have agreed to set up funding or a funding page where Angel Nation made theirs is 100% is tax deductible to the full extent of the law, and then they forward funds on to me via various projects that they that we collaborate on.
Fantastic.
So just drop me a line if anybody's interested in helping out. We could sure use it.
Okay, and give us some of your that email address again. I know it's your name, but just so we can have it again, spell it out for us.
Just go to my website, which is joelsartori.com or photoarc.com.
There we are.
Either one, photoarc, PHOTOARK, all one word, photoarc.com. I'll go there right now. I believe that right on the homepage, we're trying to generate funds for this Europe trip.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that right on the homepage of photoarc.com, we have a button, first thing people see when they log on.
Okay.
Here, that is the case.
Okay. This is good. Yes, this is so good to know because, you know, at the very least, we can be armchair supporters, you know, the click of a mouse.
Sure. Yep, the donate button's right there on the homepage, and that'll take people right to the Houston Zoo site, and they can help out if they like.
Fantastic.
But, truly, this is already the world's largest archive of studio quality guitars and animals. National Geographic has embraced it in terms of it being a long-term project for them. They're archiving everything, meaning the pictures live on, and we give away all the pictures to every zoo we work at. Every zoo we work at, they get free pictures. So it's not a good marketing program for a monetary thing, but we believe in it wholeheartedly, and the people that work here on our team, with me many years, we've all very much believe in the project, and we think that it's the right thing to do. I mean, after 10 years of doing this, I've already photographed at least a half dozen species that are extinct now, and we have the only record of these species, and we just feel it's very important work and something that we should all continue to participate in, and I hope some of your listeners do too.
I'm sure they do, and we're so inspired you know, a little cold water in the face for all of us who we get so caught up in our personal lives, and, you know, that's important. And, of course, as you said, some of the younger ones of us get so caught up in technology, and we're stuck on that screen. But that can indeed connect us to your website and help us to pay attention to things other than a quick tweet. But, well, ladies and gentlemen, it has been such a pleasure and an informative one and a call to action that doesn't need to take you any further than your backyard from Joel Sartori, who is a public speaker, a photographer, and a writer. You know, I mean, and PhotoArc is the project that he uses to remind us photographically that we are losing certain species in the world, and he at least is making a record of them in hopes that we save them. But if we can't save them, at least we will know they existed.
That's right. Most of the animals I photograph, there are no good records of these animals. In some cases, there are no pictures at all of some of these smaller animals. So it's important work, and we hope people agree that are listening today.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Joel, for being on the show. I so wish you all the best. And everyone, visit PhotoArc, the PhotoArc. Also, make donations, if you can, to Joel's work through the Houston Zoo. And what else do we need to say, Joel? Take us out.
I think that is it. Just visit us on joelsartori.com or photoarc.com to learn more and call us if they have any questions at all.
Fantastic. Thank you, Joel. All the best to you and your family and everything you do.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Tim is Tim Jennison, a well-to-do Texas inventor with no background in art. Yet he became obsessed with finding out how the Dutch painter Johannes Vermeer managed to convey a sense of light so authentically. And who better to direct and host this fascinating documentary about Tim's search for the magic of Vermeer's painting than Mr. Magic himself, Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller fame. In Tim's Vermeer, the cameras follow the increasingly fixated Jennison as he embarks on 10 years of research, gradually unlocking the apparent secret of Vermeer's success. The film plays like a really good suspense-ridden detective story. We follow his journey one step at a time through false leads and setbacks, refusing to accept easy answers until the inventor has satisfied his theory. He even goes so far as to construct an exact duplicate to the last detail of the Mir studio in Delft. We end up with a whale of a mystery story about two geniuses forging through the worlds of art, technology, math, obsession, and beauty. And what we really want to know is, did Vermeer cheat when he painted the music lesson? And even if he did, is it any the less art, or were the artist's vision and technological skills perhaps all the more remarkable? Tim's Vermeer, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Field of dreams, grieving, corporatism's supreme nightmare. In the midst of racial death by gunmen and take it down, we have been disciplined through the power of Charleston's forgiving grace, titanic loss of genius, and equal justice under law. So it is written, so let it be done. Regardless of race, color, creed, origin, heritage, political or sexual persuasion, it has been legally acknowledged in the wake of malice aforethought, murder, amazing grace, and supreme power. All of God's children should be free at last, except women. Whether celebratory reception or hateful backlash, shall we now let go of the past, its symbols, and welcome women into our national transformation from inequality to equal economic opportunity? For is it not possible the entire universe is working in mysterious ways? Iran nuclear deal? The climate change that is Pope Francis I? Potentially history-fulfilling elections, most of which are moving us away from the supremacy of any over another, except for ERA ratification. The city of Charleston, the state of South Carolina, and most of Americans across the United States have demonstrated, if not God's grace, at least the embodiment of graceful perseverance, nonviolence in the face of gun violence, and the power of forgiveness in racial unity, if not gender equality. And still, like Mother Emanuel's lost souls, mothers, daughters, and sisters outnumber the men. Although it was a long time between King's sermon and Obama eulogy, let us build on how far we've transcended from Dixiecrats after Lincoln's emancipation to flip-flopping to Republican right-wing thinking after Kennedy-Johnson's Civil Rights Act, and although knowing the race is not yet won on the streets of American hearts and minds, when the son of segregationist Strom Thurmond stands up for taking down 1960s anti-integration stars and bars, much has been overcome, though less so for women. Historically, all of America's transitions have been filled with extremes from either side of doubt, violence, hate speech, political rhetoric, misleading platitudes, and the misuse of flags and other symbols to ignite and excite the gamut of misguided emotions, failure to think rationally for the good of all, and treason against reason. Could our journey from Sandy Hook to Charleston have transformed us finally from flag-waving open-carry group-speak to being exceptional living examples of our Constitution? Could we, in November 2016, transform from a nation divided by gerrymandering, gridlock, and gender inequality into a united people embracing, learning, and benefiting from every segment of We the People? In tragedy, we often find cause to misuse mental health as transgression, instead of asking ourselves the crucial questions, seeking more than temporary shallow answers, and knocking at the door of peaceful coexistence for in-depth solutions. But fear not, for no matter which side of herstory or history you stand, in a United States of America, we are still pretty much free to be as insulting, loving, hateful, friendly, giving, greedy, forgiving, vengeful, good, bad, ugly, faithful, antagonistic, honest, deceitful, pro-life, pro-choice, disrespectful at funerals, or even civil toward our fellow human beings. And most of us can be 99% certain we probably will not be enslaved, chained to a post and whipped, or massively thrown into private prisons for hating those who don't look, think, vote, worship, or love the way we do. June 2015. Wednesday the 17th, 6 women, 3 men shot to death in Charleston. Monday the 22nd, composer James Horner dies in plane crash. Thursday the 25th, U.S. Supreme Court saves both Obamacare and Fair Housing Act. Friday the 26th, SCOTUS rules for same-sex marriage, endorsing Love Thy Gay Neighbor as Thyself. Like 13 days of October 1962, 13 days in June 2015 have both challenged and fortified those of us who choose to listen, welcome, and allow exceptional equality to be well with our soul. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.